From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. Megyn Kelly and Newt Gingrich and a lot more. Not here on this show, but we will talk about them. No, here, rather, we have a much more refined cast. That would be...
say that again.
I will. We have a much more refined cast. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here's Rosemary Arameo, head of the journalism program at UAlbany.
Hello.
Hello. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, etc. Sir.
Best to you and to all of you as Christmas approaches.
And we wish you many, many more. So we will get to Newt Gingrich and this noted interview with Megyn Kelly, which if you missed, we'll tell you all about it. But we do have a note from Georgette, a reader in New England, who says, I love you guys, and I'm one of the six listeners to your show.
What? Only half?
No, well, I was going to think the opposite. When did it go up one?
She says, actually, it was parenthetical. She says, I'm one of the parens, fill in the number you jokingly refer to from time to time. So I just put in six there, right?
I see.
I am fascinated with the wrangling over journalistic ethics that you all occasionally get into. While I'm writing this past show, you spent a good deal of the show on Trump again and so on, but you could at least have mentioned in passing the arrest of D.S. Schlossberg for filming actions during the DAPL protest. And we did not mention, this is true, Amy Goodman and the filmmaker D.S. Schlossberg, who were arrested at the protest for the Dakota Access Pipeline. And this is important because now the charges seem to be going away against Amy Goodman, but they have not. There are felony charges pending against the filmmaker D.S. Schlossberg. Facing up to perhaps 45 years in prison stemming from filming a protest at the oil pipelines. Now, what is this about?
Yeah, it's an assault on the First Amendment, and it will never last. It may, however, go up to a much higher court, even the Supreme Court, for this to be decided. Amy Goodman and D.S. Schlossberg are both not traditional journalists in the sense that we know it, card-carrying members of the New York Times, for example. However, they both have long histories of work in the media and doing the kind of work that they are doing in North Dakota. And they were arrested by police and prosecutors who feel that they're not journalists at all, that they're members of the protest, and that that's illegal, and therefore they are rightfully charged. But in fact, their work doing journalism has been halted.
Well, you know, Rex and I and you have been over this 1,000 times as to definition of a journalist. I used to have this guy who wrote for a terrible newspaper, and he would say, when somebody would refer to me as a journalist, he would say, you're no journalist. Well, what is journalist? I mean, journalist is almost a self-defined term. You know, I know people who run PhD programs who say, if you don't have a PhD in journalism, then you can't teach journalism. It's crazy.
Huh.
So, you know, I don't like this definitional stuff where the cops now decide who the journalist is.
That point was made actually by Matt Taibbi, who writes for Rolling Stone, because the prosecutor up in North Dakota, who said, well, she's a protester, referring to D.S. Schlossberg, and he mentioned that one of his favorite reporters is Matt Taibbi, and here's what Taibbi said in response. He said, a prosecutor who arrests a reporter because he doesn't think she is balanced enough is basically telling future reporters what needs to be in their stories to avoid arrest, totally improper and un-American. We have enough meddling editors in this country without also recruiting government officials to do the job.
Yes, I like the way he jabbed editors there. What I worry about is that people, you know, civilians not in the news business, don't get the significance of this, that when the government moves against reporters, they are actually moving against you. They are shutting down sources of information that you have on what's going on. That's to their benefit. They control you better. And so even if you don't like reporters, I don't know how you can not like reporters who are such interesting people. Well, isn't there a song to that effect?
They are such interesting people.
Yeah, but even if you don't like reporters, you should be appalled by this.
That's right. And even if you don't like individual reporters when they're arrested, there's a larger purpose here, a larger issue of not letting prosecutors. I've had that happen. I've had a prosecutor bawl me out, and it just happens. And then you have to take your life in your hands and drive very slowly from then on. Don't you get it? Don't you see?
Make no mistake about it that this is not an isolated incident, too. We've seen reporters and photographers in the course of their job arrested and shut down from reporting in Ferguson when there were protests going on, and definitely during the Occupy Wall Street movement around the country, journalists were treated no differently than anybody else in the way of the police. And internationally, journalists who used to be let free, you'd wear a sign that said press or media, and you were let go. You were in a special category. That's not true anymore. They are targeted, in fact, by enemies. This is not a good thing. We have ourselves in part to blame for it because we've always said we're not a special class. We're just one of you. Well, we're being killed like everybody else and arrested, too.
Well, there are those people who are around who are listening to you, Rosemary, and are saying, you know, Rosemary, you're always so defensive about the rights of journalists. I happen to think properly so.
Defensive? I'm highly promoting the need for professional journalists.
On the other hand, you don't think that being a journalist supplies you with a total immunity.
In covering news, I do. Yeah.
What'd you say?
In covering the news, yes, you have immunity.
No, that's not my question, of course. But then again, you always jump before I'm through explaining. What if a reporter commits a crime?
Yeah. Well, that's a different matter.
Well, that's what you guys always say. Well, that's a different matter.
Well, because it is.
Even trespass is not allowed. You don't break the law, but you go right up to the line of the law because you want to get a story.
But what happens is a lot of reporters are arrested simply for doing their job. For example, for filming an arrest. And if you're standing in a public street shooting a picture of a cop arresting somebody, it's happened over and over again.
Put that camera away.
Right. And they snatch the camera. And then, of course, later the chief of police apologizes, but the work has already been done. The cop has already taken over the role of journalists and the work has not been done.
Protest and the bad action of the cops go uncovered.
Well, that's interesting that you say that because here's a possibility. You know how there's a huge movement on to have police use body cameras?
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some complaints about how the police strategically turn off the body camera, you know, when there's something important going on so as to avoid freedom of information requests. On the other hand, what about reporters using body cameras?
I would never have had problems doing that.
In other words, a reporter puts a body camera on so that when they're in the midst of one of those things you're describing now, Rex.
Oh,
you know,
as long as it's voluntary. You know, I don't think that of course, it would be contrary to the First Amendment to have any such requirement that reporters carry them.
No.
And also, I'm not a public official. I mean, I function as an arm of citizens, but I'm not on the taxpayer's dime. And so it's not as though you can file a Freedom of Information request for what's in my notebook.
However, that seems to me a defensive pose. I think what Alan is asking is more theoretical.
Yes.
I would have no problem with wearing a camera when I'm working because I don't do illegal things. And in fact, most journalists in these situations, if there's a photographer nearby, will say, turn it on. They do want to record it. We're not hiding anything.
Well, actually, Rex, I wasn't suggesting that you would have to have it on, but that it might be helpful to have such a thing on while you go into
this
a difficult situation.
There are times when you would not want a photographer shooting what you're doing when you're meeting with a confidential source. That happens. You know, we're partly to blame for this because we leap on things. We like gotcha moments with politicians, and you could have a lot of gotcha moments with journalists if you hear a question that may sound biased. You know, sometimes you ask a provocative question to see what kind of an answer you get.
Yeah, right.
And people will take offense at that. So, you know,
I always tell my students that the ethics in journalism comes in when you're about to broadcast or publish. It doesn't come in when you're reporting. Then it's much more, no question is out of line. Of course, you're not breaking the law, but no approach is really ruled out when you're still in the reporting stages because that's how you test the limits of the story.
Well, yes, that's true. And every once in a while, you'll see a press conference where the same, dare I say it, idiot reporter will ask yet another really stupid question. You may see this as provocative, but I would see it, and we've all seen it up at the Capitol, and then they become pariahs in a way because the judgment is not from the outside. The judgment is from their colleagues.
I know. What I tend to see is that the stupid questions are not bold and not to the point. I don't get too upset when I see someone pressing home in an issue. You haven't answered it. Can I get back to my question? We need more of that.
So speaking of tough what do you think about that question that Megyn Kelly posed to Newt Gingrich? This is what happened. Newt Gingrich was upset that she used the term sexual predator in discussing Donald Trump. She said, "I'm sick and tired of people like you using language that's inflammatory. That's not true," said Gingrich. Megyn Kelly, the Fox News host, said, "Excuse me, Mr. Speaker, you have no idea whether it's true or not." And he said, "You are fascinated with sex and you don't care about public policy." It was an awkward, let's say, moment. Was it not? But I think it demonstrated a number of things. For one thing, it was a reporter being aggressive, a TV anchor who has shown herself to be, dare I say, not just another pretty face, because she has been bolder than you would have ever expected a Fox News anchor to be.
And it's working for her. So now, the Kelly File, or whatever the program is called, you know, instead of being in a class of sort of namby-pambies, she's taken some risk and has ended up doing very well.
I love her. I think she's really grown through this season. Her worst part was when she went in and apologized to Trump, having done nothing wrong herself, and confrontations with him. And they are increasingly confrontations, not interviews. And she apologized to get him back on the show. But she sounded to me like a lawyer, not a reporter yesterday. She did not let Newt Gingrich walk all over her. I'm astounded by the reaction to the interviews. Hillary supporters think she won and she stood up and she, you know, she handled it well. And Trump supporters overwhelmingly think Newt just got the best of her. Finally, took care of that.
And Trump said so.
Oh, yeah.
And Trump is all that. Well, that's the big lie. You just say it over and over and over again, even though the mass of people think that she did very well.
What is interesting is that Rupert Murdoch himself is now quoted as being on the record saying, "We want Megyn Kelly to re-up. Her contract is up.
$10 million.
Well, I think it's $20. I think they're looking at a $20 million
contract.
And if you've got the CEO himself saying she's an important part of the family and we'd like to keep her and we're really waiting for her answer, it's kind of putting her on the spot and saying we need you to stay here, because she has, you know, every network now wants her. And
I want her.
It would be quite a moment.
Wait a second. I'll let a couple of these go by, Rosemary. But
I have some
real objections to that. If I were to say I want her, just theoretically, you would say, "Oh, Alan, you're a pig." So I don't think.
What are you saying? I would hire her, is what I meant.
Well, you didn't. What you meant and what you said are two different things. And I want to point out one more example of, you know.
Hey, listen, Newt. I'm not Megan. I'm going to just like jump on you and punch.
Perfect.
Oh, boy. It's really quite something.
I don't think I would have kept my cool the way she did. She handled herself forcefully, but never impolitely. I thought it was really a remarkable performance.
Yep.
He put her on the spot. He is a bully, and he's not without, you know, a presence. And to be really attacked, well, you're fascinated with sex. This from a man, you know, who truly is fascinated with sex, both in his personal life and in the way he was involved in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And to be charged that way by him and to just have the aplomb to sit there and say, "Me, really?" I thought it was quite a performance.
I think it does show that law training and courtroom experience are great credentials for a TV anchor.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because she is a lawyer, you know, and as are a number of TV presenters, as they're called in England. And so she really can keep her cool.
Rex, Alan is bothering me. He's saying I want her about Megan. That's not nice.
You said it. I didn't say that. I didn't say anything like it. You're the one who said it. And I pointed out that that's exactly the kind of thing you would jump on any, and even jump on becomes, you know.
I'm not talking anymore.
If a man were saying it, you would be all over them.
Well, I think
you jump on them.
You know, in the. You evaluate comments in the context of history. Rosemary doesn't have a history of sexist comments, you know, and so.
Well, my point exactly.
Or of wanting women in that way, or of even desiring Alan in that way. So, to clear my reputation here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's.
God, now I'm really empathizing with poor Megan.
She has never said that she wanted to jump on Alan in that way. So I'm a witness to that. But the question that the Trump supporters are upset about is one of bias, and this is actually, of course, an ongoing conversation, and it goes goes actually to the question about the role of reporters being taken down by cops or being taken down in doing their jobs. And it goes to the fear that is now struck in the hearts of a lot of reporters covering Trump rallies because Trump telling them, telling the fans, that the reporters are all against him.
This fits into his strategy of being the anti-establishment person. As we all know, and we've talked about it on this show a lot, newspapers and newspaper people are not held in great repute. They are, they're hated. And people, you know, hold them responsible. And what Trump has been doing all along is playing the Robin Hood role to the people. It's crazy, but he has, because he's one of the most successful rich guys in the country. But he's been saying, I'm your champion. I hate reporters now, or I hate politicians.
You know, a Quinnipiac poll last month showed that 9 in 10 Republicans say that news organizations are biased against Donald Trump.
Well, exactly. And we have, the media, have contributed to that view. And we thought we were being, or think we are being, honest and bold and coming up and saying, here are all the reasons Trump cannot be president. He is not just bad, he's historically horrific as a candidate. And there have been editorials and investigations. The fact is, the media has gone after Trump. And by our own admission, we have gone after him. So how does, if I'm a Trump supporter, does that not bolster my view that the media is biased?
Gone after. You have to define gone after. In what way do you think that there has been bias in going after him?
I think there has been a contributed effort to find dirt about him. Bad things about his business, bad things about his relationship with women.
Well, aren't they doing that with Hillary? I mean, aren't they going after the Clinton Foundation?
I think historically there's been a lot more coverage of Hillary.
Now you're both sounding defensive.
I'm not defensive. I am factual.
One publication that has endorsed Donald Trump.
That's a different matter. Those are editorial pages.
Only to us that's a difference.
Well, it is a reality. It is not the same thing as reporting. You know, this history of bias, quote unquote, it goes back to FDR's day when Farley, his campaign manager, said that the media were constantly after FDR. There's actually a study that shows that in 2000, George Bush's campaign was twice as likely as Al Gore's to get positive press coverage in the last weeks of the campaign.
These are all niceties that we in the media read and we who are study the media in academia look at. Trump supporters are not either of these. And what they see is a newspaper who calls Trump the worst candidate in the history of the Republic and then runs a bunch of investigative pieces that make him look bad. And, you know, they'll have one or two things about the email, but they're always containing lines such as there's no real death blow in the WikiLeaks stuff. The coverage is overwhelmingly anti-Trump.
Shouldn't have been coverage of Donald Trump of all these things?
Absolutely not. I'm in the media. I think they did a bold and good thing. What I'm saying is that it's having an unintended consequence, which is that we look even more biased than we have ever been thought.
All right. And so is there a solution to this, or should the media just accept the fact that we are now living in a post-fact age in politics, when supporters or opponents of candidates don't care about the facts that are presented by the media?
Well, I'd like a turn. Could I have a turn, Rosemary? I think, in fact, it's a matter of self-regulation. People have to look. People have to say, what does this appear to be to our readers? What's happening to our credibility here? Okay, Rosemary, take it.
Well, I think that there is a solution. I don't know what it is right now, and I suspect we're going to be looking at this for the next 10 years. I think it has to do with media literacy. That's your old thing, Rex, where people have to understand the job of the media. They have to understand things like how the editorials are different than the front page. Those are perceptions that I believe are lost on my students, on many of my students, and on and others who aren't in college, for example. I think it has to do with being aggressive against both candidates, which I actually see a lot of evidence of, but others don't, because it's all about perception and what you read into the news.
But, you know, I'm confused by this, Rosemary. Let's remember who Trump's basic support that he is trying to get comes from. You know, Hillary can say basket of deplorables, but another way of looking at this is that a lot of the people who are in that Trump, 40% are the uneducated part of America who do not have access to what you and Rex would call citizenship education or whatever, you news media education, and, you know, sort of look down your noses and say, we have to do more of this in high school, places like that. Yes, that's it. That
says
is
the man with the PhD.
That's an attack. Yes.
You know, it's also not true that Trump is not an expert user and manipulator of the media. And the people controlling him, I think, are also expert media people. Roger Ailes and Steve Bannon know how to use the darker arts of journalism.
Absolutely.
Propaganda, distribution, innuendo, things that we try to get out of ethical journalism are all over. He's totally marked by it. So he's knocking journalism at the same time that he's using a
Absolutely.
Dark form of it.
It's called hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that we will be dealing with this for years to come. And the damage, I think, to the reputation for integrity of the news media is going to be lasting, especially if we come out of this with perhaps a Trump TV network, with increasingly media identified with their particular point of view. It's interesting. CNN actually has topped Fox News for four straight weeks
yeah.
in the key demographic, 25 to 54.
First time in a decade and a half that's happened.
But the people at Trump rallies are attacking CNN.
Clinton News Network.
Yeah, the Clinton
So News what? May I ask, so what?
Well, there are a lot of them. There are a lot of people.
Well, no, I know. You got the basic 40% who are voting for Trump, and they are following this thing along.
Half of whom are perhaps just voting for him because he's the Republican candidate, but half of whom, say 20%, are really hardcore, the Breitbart people, let's say.
Still a huge number.
Yes.
Look, there is a good part of this country, a good part of Germany, a good part of France, who accept this kind of anti-immigrant, know-nothing stuff that we have seen for years and years. And what do you think? They're going to pat you on the back for doing the yeoman work, which Rosemary describes, and you're proud of it, but that's not going to change. Now, look, Fox has been doing all of this work for all this time. Not very much good about Hillary, but all of a sudden, Fox isn't controlling the elections. The Daily News, they didn't like Roosevelt, didn't matter. The biggest newspapers around, but people didn't listen to them.
We have to move on to one more topic before the show ends. Hard to believe that that could be happening. By the way, if you have views, share them with us. media@wamc.org is our email address. There is more bad news in the print world. Print advertising woes are getting worse. The Wall Street Journal has reported a deep global decline in print advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And the result is that there are layoffs right and left. The New York Times is soon going to announce some. The New York Daily News is. Gannett has reduced workforce by several hundred people around the country. I think 2% of its large news workforce, including Burlington, Vermont, which is a Gannett paper, and our own Poughkeepsie Journal down in the Hudson Valley, which gives us the bad news that our dear friend Stu Shinsky, who is often in front of these microphones as executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, is one of those whose jobs has been eliminated. Hard to believe.
It's awful.
It?
But what I don't get is, look, these people are out there, the Gannett people, and they are buying. This has nothing to do with Stu, per se. In fact, they're buying. They're trying to buy the Tribune Company. And they're talking about, I think, $800 million. Now, why are you laying people off at existing properties, which are doing so well, or relatively well, in order to buy even more newspapers, which, you know, you don't have to be Einstein to figure out are going to be having their own problems?
Well, they believe they can accomplish with efficiencies what these companies have not been able to do. I think it's bad news because it means, what, lay off more journalists at each of these important properties, the Baltimore Sun, the Los Angeles Times, all of those papers that are part of Tribune and the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if people in a newsroom go crazy and they say, we're revolting? Do they have any options? The people who are the survivors? Nothing. There's nothing they can do, right?
No, because over the past decade, about 50,000 journalists have lost their jobs in this downsizing because of the economics of it. There's not really much that you can do. But it is tragic for the communities where there is less journalism being practiced, where there are beats that are not being covered. It happens in my newsroom. You know, we are able to do less because we have fewer people than we used to have, just because the economics of the job are such that it is a changing world. And the digital landscape has not yet produced the growth that will sustain the kind of journalism that we've historically practiced. Very difficult. Well, with that cheery note, we have to go on. The Media Project, coming to you from Albany, New York, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith. We invite you to join us by WAMC.org. And thanks, and hope that you'll come back to us next week.
Now Right. Let's listen to Pete. Thank God somebody listens to Pete.
Yeah.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained.
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.